Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as James, he's our guy.
We still got James Harden. Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today is a very good friend of the show, Ali Khanbijani of The Athletic, Mr. X's and O's himself. Ali Khan, how are you doing today, sir?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm hanging in there, man. You know, there's a lot going on with this organization, but there's also a lot to be excited about. And you know, that's what you and I are going to dive into very thoroughly today, because who better than to dive into the X's and the O's and, you know, and what's going on with this new look Rockets team and the system that Silas is implementing, other than you, who is, you know, in my opinion, again, one of the best minds when it comes to X's and O's, you know, anywhere that you can find.
I don't know. I'm, you know, honestly, getting the four preseason games back on. It was good to finally have some basketball. I know it's only been a few months, but it just feels good to be able to watch basketball again. So excited to also talk X's and O's with you as well.
Absolutely. And that's what we're going to get into here in just a short moment. But I would be remiss not to at least mention it before we dive into Steven Silas, the offense, the defense, what we're noticing, what we've seen through these four preseason games. But it is worth mentioning that James Harden did speak to the media again. And, this whole James Harden saga has been quite an interesting dilemma for the Houston Rockets. And he dropped his first next question today, unfortunately. And I know that wasn't something that Rockets fans were looking forward to hearing, but unfortunately it happened. So Adam Spolin, a reporter for 610, basically just asked James, hey, now that you've been in training camp for about a week, do you feel any better about this situation now than you did before you arrived? And Harden dropped the next question bit, which is just, you know, not a great look. Unfortunately, that doesn't instill a whole lot of confidence in his desire to be here in Houston. But for the time being, James is in Houston. He is under contract. And so far, apart from the little bit of a kerfluffle at the start of training camp, it looks like he is here and, you know, behaving professionally and is going to go out and at least be the James Harden that everybody knows and loves and is capable of being, you know, an MVP caliber performer, an all NBA caliber performer, which is going to be a great benefit as the catalyst in this new system that Steven Silas is putting into place. And so, Ali Khan, I want to ask you, just first off, before we dive into any of the specifics, what are your first impressions of Silas now that you've kind of gotten a chance to, you know, be in some, you know, media availabilities with him and ask him some questions? Give me your first impressions of him as the Rockets' new head coach.
We were very lucky with the media to have Coach D'Antoni. Coach D'Antoni is a pro's pro, always took his time to answer questions, did a great job kind of explaining the game to not only us as media, but just for those listening as well as fans. That was great. And then now bringing in Steven Silas, I think he's fantastic with the media as well. He always answers questions really well in terms of his articulation to the topic that was being asked. He doesn't shy away from his responses. If he doesn't agree with something, he'll be sure to say it. I think one of my first experiences with Silas, it was like early on in training camp, I asked him if Christian Wood can be a secondary ball handler. And he was quick to turn me down. He says, no, he's not a secondary ball handler. But he's a very nice guy. He does a great job of kind of explaining the game. I think that's the key as a coach, whenever you have a team like this, whenever you're trying to establish a new culture, you know, I know what players say, they don't listen to the media, but players do listen to them in terms of they do like look at what the coaches are saying. They look at what their players are saying. They're paying attention. And I think Silas has done a great job there. So in terms of that, I give him an ace to start off with. Now, in terms of first impressions on the court, I think what's been really interesting is that what he tells us what he's going to do, he's trying to do. He's experimenting. He's trying different things offensively and defensively. We're seeing a lot of interesting actions. And I think if you are a Mavericks fan, you will see a lot of this very similar offensive structures we saw in the Mavs five-out offense last year. There's a lot of just spread ball movement, just ball screens, high screen roll, a lot of Spain action, Miami action, which is very new that, you know, we can discuss later. But there's a lot of different things that are very similar to what the Mavs did in five-out when they had Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis running pick and roll with three shooters around them. So I think that, you know, we're seeing those similarities there. I think the biggest difference, what I've noticed, compared to what Silas has brought in when he compared to Coach D'Antoni, is that there is a little bit more movement off the ball. And what I mean by that is there's a misconception that Coach D'Antoni's offense was just isolation. Nobody really moved off the ball. I mean, yes and no. I think there was movement on the weak side. And you have to move to kind of keep the defense occupied. But when it comes to Silas's offense, there's a lot more movement. You have to make sure that you're always providing the optimal spacing. And it's all about positioning. And so I think that we are noticing that. I think he's putting his players in best positions to be successful. It's going to be a lot of interchangeable parts as we kind of get towards the halfway point of the season and into the playoffs if the Rockets make it, that you're going to see all these five guys on the floor be so interchangeable where they can be on the three-point line. It's really going to open a lot of different things for them. So very impressive start in terms of kind of what he wants to do. Now it's going to be up to this talent on the floor to be able to execute that and kind of show, you know, all that he's been talking about with the media, all that he's been talking about with us about what he wants to do. Is it going to come to fruition?
You know, I think one guy who has been an absolute standout, who's, you know, in a way has been kind of overshadowed through some of these, you know, through these four preseason games is Eric Gordon, actually, who is already, you know, has become a favorite of Steven Silas, who, you know, Silas has been speaking so highly of Eric Gordon every time his name is brought up to him in those media availabilities. But Eric is actually, through four preseason games, he's shooting over 40% from behind the three-point line. He's averaging 15 points a contest, you know, and he looks in probably the best shape that I've seen him in a while in a Houston Rockets jersey. And I don't know if, Alicon, maybe you can correct me here, but I've also kind of noticed, and I noticed it very first game back when with Eric Gordon on the floor, it looks like his release is a little bit quicker on his shot. I don't know if I'm just imagining that, but it looks like his form, maybe he tweaked it a little bit. And on top of that, he just looks very at home in this new offense. He looks like he is really thriving.
You know, so I'm not gonna lie, I'm not too sure about his release. I haven't really paid attention to that much. So I don't want to come out and say, oh, I've noticed something different. But, you know, I will have to take a look at that. And then, you know, I'll be sure, you know, once as the season gets going, if I do notice that, we can have a conversation on that on Twitter about that. I have not noticed anything about his shot. I will say what's really interesting is that where Silas is putting him on the floor. And I think it's going to come – it's not only when he plays alongside James and John, but also by himself in the second. So let's start when he plays with the starting lineup or when he's playing with those primary ball handlers and John Wall and James Harden. We're seeing Eric Gordon oftentimes be in that slot position. Why is the slot position so important, especially in Silas's offense? That slot shooter has to be number one, the best shooter and the strongest shooter. And what I mean by that is that wing three-pointer is the longest three-pointer in terms of the line around the perimeter. And so you have to be able to lift the defense, right? You have to be able to draw the defender away from the paint, draw the defender away from the ball, and force the defender to have to guard against you as a shooter. And Eric Gordon does a great job of that. He's always, over the last several seasons, working to expand his range by 1 to 2 feet each season. So we're seeing that. He's lifting a lot higher, that's the terminology, towards the slot or the wing, and kind of drawing that defender away from James Harden and John Wall. Now, what's interesting about Silas and what he's doing is that not only is Eric doing that, which is something he's similarly done, he's also going into the corners, and he's also setting screens on the weak side for other shooters as well. And what I mean by that is if a guy is attacking downhill, right, they're obviously going to try to help on either James Harden, John Wall when they're driving downhill, or Christian Wood, DeMarcus Cousins when they're crashing down the lane. And when that happens, defenders will help off of the corner shooters. So what does Eric do? He recognizes that, you know, teams are not going to let him go, or they're going to try to play on him very, very, very physically. So he's going out and setting a flare screen, opening up that corner shooter to knock down some shots. I believe off of my count alone, he's had about 4 to 5 flare screens already in the first few preseason games. That may not seem like a lot, but under the under the randomness of this offense and what they want to do, that's a lot, especially for a shooter like that to be able to set those nice screens for Tucker or House or even McLemore to knock out some shots. So I think that's something interesting that we've been noticing him use it as more of an off-ball screener. And in terms of his second unit and what he's going to be doing with second unit, he's going to be a lot more of a primary ball handler. And Coach Salas really has discussed that he wants him to be able to play like Eric, use his quick first step to get past defenders, but also he has a good passing ability. It may not be as good as John Wall or James Harden, but we haven't seen that because in the second unit offense, it's been more so that, hey, you know, you have to play off of a primary ball handler. I think we're going to see some minutes where Eric Gordon's going to be able to be by himself. He's going to be able to be the main initiator along with other guys as well. And it's going to allow him to kind of showcase what we saw in that 2016-2017 season when he was able to average more assists than he has the last few seasons. So a lot of interesting things going on. I think from a continuity perspective, I like Eric Gordon coming off the bench. I think it's going to work well for him. But overall, especially in this closing lineups, he's going to be somebody who defenses have to pay attention to, not just because of his shooting, but because of his ability to move off the ball, help set hard screens, get the corner shooters involved, but also be able to attack off of closeouts in a 5-1 offense.
And, you know, I think just to also reaffirm something there, you know, we did find out, thankfully, from Steven Silas that he is leaning the direction of bringing Eric Gordon off the bench, which was great to hear just from the standpoint of having some consistency, because at times throughout, you know, much of last season with there was just inconsistency all throughout the lineup. And, you know, Eric didn't know whether he was starting, coming off the bench, and, you know, just having that level of consistency, knowing how you're approaching the game on a nightly basis. Is so huge for a player to really get into a rhythm, get into a groove, and know how they're approaching the game mentally. And Silas does want to utilize Eric as a scorer. He wants to, you know, focus on him and have him be kind of, at least my takeaway is that he kind of envisions him almost being the centerpiece of that secondary unit, you know, really probably being, you know, a focal point of the offense at times for that secondary unit. Like you said, you know, utilizing him as a ball handler, being able to attack in space, all those great things. And, you know, this is something that we're going to touch base on a little bit more, because I'm actually going to see, I want to see Ali Khan here in just a second, how good your, like, cognitive ability is, if I can paint a picture for you of a play that I remember seeing from the second preseason game. And I want to see if you can actually recall what play that was and what specific action it was. And we'll get there in just a quick moment after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. Look, college football is heading into bowl season, and there are some seriously big matchups. NFL regular season is winding down, and the playoff picture is becoming just a little bit clearer, and the NBA season is right around the corner. And there is only one place that has you covered, and one place that we here at Locked On trust, and that is betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Maybe you want to try and place a bet on who's going to be this year's MVP, who's going to be the sixth man of the year, who's going to be the coach of the year. Just do that at betonline.ag, and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Don't want to miss out as we go into the NBA season opener this Wednesday. We will have a season preview of sorts with Ben Dubose, so you do not want to miss the Podfather. But right now, chatting with Ali Khan Bijani of The Athletic. Now, Ali Khan, you know, there was this play, and I'm going to try to paint, as you know, the best picture that I can, but... And I believe it was the second preseason game. So John Wall brought the ball up and was, you know, initiating action on the strong side with DeMarcus Cousins. And it kind of looked like, you know, just a, you know, kind of pick and roll, pick and pop scenario sort of as Cousins was coming up to set the screen. Now on the weak side, we saw both Eric Gordon and Ben McLemore kind of dancing around each other, and kind of, it was almost like there was some indecision about who was going to be setting the screen, and then it looked like Ben McLemore set the initial screen for Eric. Eric flared out and then dropped back down to set a screen for McLemore. And then McLemore was actually able to come up and get a wide open three off of a screen set by Eric Gordon. Is that enough description for you to be able to tell me what play that was, or sort of what action that might have been?
From what it sounds like, it was a part of their double drag action or their package that they have. I don't really have the exact name of the play. I'm also... we're all learning about Steven Silas and his offense. I'm still learning more about his offense as well. But that does sound like something out of their double drag package that they have. A lot of teams actually use that kind of package where you have two shooters coming off of two screen, or two shooters and a screener, and you involve one of those shooters off those screens as a ball handler or as a shooter. So that is something we will definitely see, especially in spread ball screen offenses like the Mavericks did last year, and now with the Rockets as well. You will see something like that. So it's probably off of that package. Unfortunately, I'm still learning the plays. If you ask me in like a couple of weeks, I will hopefully have an answer for you on what that play is.
Well, and first off, I'm just impressed at your ability to be able to recognize what that was off of what was probably a really crappy description of it. But let's dive in. You mentioned some of the specific actions and sequences, you know, early on that we've seen so far through these four preseason games. And you threw out one that we haven't heard, or that I haven't heard from you before, which is the Miami action, which is apparently new this year that you've seen Silas kind of instituting. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so you know, that's a name that when my conversations with other phone coordinators or coaches, that's the name I've used. Now, one thing I've been told is that different teams across the league use different terminology for it. So the key with Miami action is that it's the type of stuff they run, for example, in Miami with the Miami Heat for Duncan Robinson. So you rip a guy to the rim, then you clean up the screener. So what I mean by that is it's like basically like picking the picker, screening the screener action. So it's especially hard to guard when they run it for James, because if James Harden is screening, you can't leave his body. And if you don't leave his body, then essentially the guy can have an easy layup, or the shooter can have an easy layup off of it. So that's a lot of really interesting things. It was actually an after timeout set that they used in that third preseason game at home, where they used a Miami action as well. So we're seeing a little bit of it. I think in terms of those types of things, it may take a little bit longer to kind of see more often within the offense. I think we're going to see a lot more similar stuff than we saw last 3 years. A lot of 21 series or 21 pistol, if that's a term that you've heard before. Essentially what that action is when you have your one and your two on the floor, initiate the offense together to start the position on the strong side, and then you involve the five or the ball hand, the screener at the top of the key. And you also have delay, which is very similar as well. You have a ball handler, a wing, and a center on the strong side, and kind of instituting a three-man action there as well. So we're going to see a lot of 21, what I like to call it, and a lot of delay. And we've seen a lot of that in the preseason as well. And if you want a more of a visual description of what those things are, you can find my work on The Athletic that has described exactly what those plays are. And if you reach out to me on Twitter, I'll be sure to provide you visual examples on YouTube or other videos as well, so you kind of take a look. So feel free to reach out to me if you're a listener, and if you want to kind of get a better idea what I refer to when I say 21 and or delay. It's very hard sometimes on an audio thing like this to be able to do it, but more than happy to kind of share the information and share some visual tools that can help you kind of recognize that when you're watching the game.
You know, one of these times we're going to get you on a live podcast, which is all kinds of fun. And we're going to have video and everything. And we're going to get you like the, you know, Matt Bullard with the bullseye, and you're going to be drawing pictures on your screen, and it's going to be beautiful. And we're going to do that one day. I'm going to hold you to that, Ali Khan. Now I've got a couple follow-ups based on what you just said. Now my first is, and this might be a stupid question, so I apologize, but ATO plays, can those be run? Those aren't exclusively after a timeout, right? They could be roughly any dead ball scenario, correct?
Yes. When I refer to as after timeouts, it's usually because they've had a chance to speak with the coach. There's actually, let's say you watch the Rockets on Wednesday, and you see James Harden or John Wall kind of make a signal, like they're writing something with their hands. Like they don't actually have a pen in their hand or like a paper, they're just like with their hand signaling they're writing something. That means they're probably about to run the play that was after the timeout. So sometimes teams don't run that play immediately after a timeout. They wait a possession or two because they may have had multiple fast breaks or a foul, whatever the case may be. And then they run that play. They'll signal that with like a little, like kind of a drawing type of signal. But when it comes down to it, a lot of the Rockets plays and across the league, it's based off of structure and offensive structure. So, for example, 21 is not just a play because there's multiple plays and variations of 21 or 21 series or pistol. It's also an action in terms of how players are specifically lined up on the perimeter. So whenever you have 2-1, it's always when the one and the two, so the point guard and the shooting guard are on one side of the floor, and then you have the three and the four on the opposite side of the floor on the weak side as shooters, and then you have the kind of five at the top of the key. That's kind of how it's usually structured. Or when you have delay or when you have all these different things, it's based off of kind of positioning of where these guys are. Now, when you're playing five out, that adds a little bit more of a wrinkle to it, and that you have these people all over the perimeter, but you have a lot more movement in the wall because you want to make sure that you're always keeping the defense spaced out and away from the paint. And so I think a lot of these after timeouts, what they're going to allow the Rockets to do is just be able to kind of provide a different look. But ultimately what the Rockets will do is play a lot more of a random offense, more of a motion offense where they're reading and reacting off of each other. The ball movement has to be there. They're making plays for each other. We're seeing that a lot. They Jackson, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've had 25 assists in a few of the preseason games so far, 20 or plus more, which is a lot more than they had last season, obviously. And so we're seeing that ball move around. We're seeing them trying to find that right play to make the extra pass to the open shooter. So they will see a lot more of that, especially early on when they're trying to figure out how to kind of get that going with random offense.
I think, and this might be the area where I think there's a bit of a misconception in the you know, D'Antoni offense versus Steven Silas's offense, is it does feel like there is quite a bit of repositioning happening in Silas's offense, where a player will, you know, execute their initial action, they'll drive, whatever it may be, and, you know, maybe the shot's not there, so they pass out, but then they're repositioning themselves in the right spot to keep the spacing adequate, whereas yeah. At times it felt like with D'Antoni's offense, especially because so much of it was predicated on one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook being the guy initiating the action all the time, that, you know, at times, and maybe this is a fault of Harden and Westbrook, not necessarily the system and Mike D'Antoni, but it does kind of feel like those guys at times didn't necessarily reposition, other than, you know, James Harden floating back out towards the half court line as kind of the safety valve to reset the play if necessary. Whereas in Harden's first preseason game, the fourth one, the most recent one, had, you know, one of his early plays, he drove in, kicked the ball out, and you know, it went out to, I believe it was Christian Wood actually, who pump faked the three, then drove in, and then Harden repositioned in the corner and got a wide open three pointer off of a pass from Christian Wood, which was just, if you had shown me that play a year ago, I'm still blown away by it, but I would have been mesmerized, because it's not something that we've really seen a whole lot of from James Harden specifically, is that ability or that desire to reposition on a play.
You know, to me, when you look at the whole concept of an isolation offense, there's this misconception. I think you kind of discussed it, where the Rockets did not have any movement. When it comes to weak side movement or off ball movement, the Rockets did have that. But when it comes to, it's all about the preferences of the player as well. So let's talk about James Harden's preferences. What are they? Well, for example, when he's in isolation, he likes to have three shooters on one side and one shooter on the opposite or the near side. And why is that? Because initially, if you have three on one side and one on the other side, that side with one shooter has a lot less space occupied by defenders, and you can get by his man easily and have a lot more space to operate to get into the paint. Versus if you have two shooters on both sides, yes, it's a lot more space around the rim, but it's a lot more crowded at the perimeter. It's much tougher for him to kind of get by multiple defenders and then get inside the paint. So, you know, he has that preference of kind of having space early and letting his arms and his skill be able to create contact and finish through contact inside the paint. So that's one thing. Now, once you have that alignment set up, if you're a scorer, you don't want your players to move too much, because you want them to be exactly where you are. So you know, hey, if I have this defender come, I know which defender this was helping off of, and I know which pass to make to the right guy. And that's why James Harden was so successful in getting those corner three-point attempts for his teammates, because he knew as soon as that help defender came, he knew who was open. Because the defense is probably going to split the gap between two shooters on that weak side, and he just has to make sure that he makes the right pass. So in case PJ Tucker can shoot it, he can. or if PJ can make the extra pass to somebody else to shoot it as well. So it's a lot of those things are involved where people think, oh, they're not moving too much. Well, it's also about the preferences of the player, and it's also about what they want in the offense. Now, the key with D'Antoni was simplicity. Simplicity doesn't necessarily mean no adjustments, okay? Simplicity means that we are running where we're running because we're good at it, and until you stop us, we're going to keep doing it. And we saw a lot of that 2016, 2017. We saw a lot of that during the Western Conference finals trip for the Rockets, where they were able to consistently make the plays because back then, too, isolation was the key, right? And you're able to kind of do these things. And so, you know, that's a really big misconception I really just want to be able to address. And one last point about D'Antoni I'll make is, you know, people are always going to be mad at what they deem a failure. And it was a failure, right? They obviously did not win a championship during the tenure of Mike D'Antoni here in Houston. So because things ended so poorly, it's easier to get mad at the old narrative that Mike D'Antoni didn't run. Well, in actuality, he did. They were the best after timeout team in the league two of the last 4 years, and they had a top five or top three offense arguably in the last 4 years as well. And so when you have that type of precedent, I don't think you can say, oh, this guy, you know, wasn't a good offensive coach, or, you know, they're not making adjustments. The adjustments were there. It was a lot simple, and it gave a lot of freedom to these players. When players talk about Mike D'Antoni, the key thing they say is not just he's a player's coach, but he gives them freedom. And that freedom comes from being able to make a play that they see on the court as well. Silas's offense is a lot more structured. He wants to get towards that freedom with more of a what he calls a random offense. But it's also very similar in that regard. It's going to be up to the players under that structure to be able to play more of a random offense. So I just wanted to be able to address those misconceptions, Jackson. I know it's a lot, but I really hope it gives the audience a lot more of a perspective of kind of what happened, especially with James Harden and Russell Westbrook.
You know, and I think, Alikhan, you really hit the nail on the head there in saying that, you know, I think a key of it was the simplicity part of it, and not with a negative connotation behind it. But I do think that one of the takeaways, and this is my own opinion as well, and, you know, we'll deviate off this topic in a moment, but, you know, the Rockets were a team that prided themselves on getting up, you know, just burying their opponents in an avalanche of three-pointers by prioritizing threes, by getting the quality shots that they were comfortable with. And even though they didn't necessarily have the best three-point shooters, because of their sheer volume, they were able to outpace their opponents. But one thing that the Lakers did in the playoffs, in the five-game series just now in the bubble, was they took away that weapon. Utilizing their two sets of defensive schemes, which, you know, what I remember reading about, it wasn't necessarily a full-blown switching scheme. It was kind of a unique type of switching scheme, and the name is escaping me right now, but it was a very effective defensive scheme, which really threw the Rockets off. And it had shades of that 2016-2017 series against the Spurs, where they were getting run off the three-point line. They were taken out of what they wanted to do, and there wasn't an adjustment made. And I think that's where a lot of fans feel that they were let down by Mike D'Antoni, is it felt like there wasn't a backup plan for when the Lakers were able to so simply make the adjustment, start playing their version of quote-unquote small ball with Anthony Davis at the five, and they were able to bring the Rockets, you know, three-point attempts per game down from the low 50s all the way down into the low 30s, which is you're cutting off a huge chunk of the offense at that point.
Yeah, no, and I don't have any issues with, you know, saying that, because it's true. It did happen. They weren't able to make the proper adjustments clearly to have a winning series. The Lakers, you know, they took advantage of Russell Westbrook's minutes on the court, and the Rockets tried to counter that by mimicking James and Russ's minutes together, not staggering as much as they would want to. But even then, that was unsuccessful. So, you know, they tried some things that didn't work out well. But I'm just going to make this one last point. While I'm also agreeing with you, Jackson, I'm just going to make this one last point, in that D'Antoni always gave his players the freedom to do what they want to do on the court and to be able to make sure that they can be successful. That also doesn't necessarily mean that he never spoke up to his players and told his players what to do. He did. But also, he understood that the players themselves are seeing what's on the court. They have a good collaboration there. And he wanted to make sure that his players had that freedom, that empowerment to make sure, hey, if you see a play, make the play. Go score. Play within the offense.
And these are excellent points. And this feels like a really thorough conversation where, again, it's not, you know, we're not sitting here bashing Mike D'Antoni. We're both, understanding of the fact that there were some shortcomings there, but at the same time, you know, Mike D'Antoni is a certified basketball genius. You know, he is, you know, one of the greatest minds that this game has ever seen, and he revolutionized the game of basketball to where it's at this day and age. You know, the three-point revolution, all of that, you know, going, you know, undersized, you know, getting, you know, doing things in an unconventional manner, you know, really setting the bar for the rest of the league.
When I mentioned this terminology, I said that, you know, people can reach out to me to learn more about, like, 21 series delay, all these things. I mean, where are they coming from? Like, who made these really popular in the league? I mean, there's a lot of coaches who made them popular in the league, but one in particular is Coach D'Antoni. 7 seconds or less offense is really predicated on some of these things. Through hold action, 21 series, all these different things that exist. D'Antoni made them famous with Phoenix. He brought them here to Houston, used it with James Harden, Patrick Beverley, and Eric Gordon initially, then had James, Eric, and Chris, and then added it with James, Eric, and Russ. And you're seeing that continuity is still there. The Rockets will still use a lot of those very similar sets, especially with John Lucas still here on the coaching staff. And you know, those types of offensive actions, because I call them actions the way D'Antoni used them, not plays, they really have a lot of counters and variances to it. And you saw the Rockets do a lot of that last year. Yes, they did not do well in the playoffs, and the offense struggled. And I think teams were able to kind of hone in the predictability of the offense, and as Kosas is kind of, they want to take away from that predictability, but defenses were able to hone in on predictability, and Coach D'Antoni and the coaching staff weren't able to make the proper adjustments necessary. But to say that they didn't make any adjustments, I don't think that's fair to them.
And I think that's probably a good place to leave it, because I will agree with that as well. You know, I think it's kind of a hyperbole to say that they didn't make any adjustments. I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, the Rockets to an extent got outclassed. I think there was a really you know, painful issue with Russ being a non-shooter on the court in, you know, a quote-unquote five-out offense. It's tough to have a five-out offense when you have a non-shooter out there. Yes.
Especially when they don't have the ball as much in their hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that actually brings up a really good point that I want to get to here in just a second, and we'll get there after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Let's talk protein bars for just a split second, all right? Look, you know, some people, they have a negative relationship with protein bars, but you can start having a positive relationship with protein bars if you check out Built Bar. They've got 18 amazing flavors. They've got the 12 OG flavors. Can't go wrong with salted caramel. Can't go wrong with peanut butter, German chocolate. You name it, they've got it. These flavors are incredible. Some of the newer ones, carrot cake, cookies and cream, just amazing flavors. And here's the thing, right, is these protein bars, they're not like traditional protein bars. For all intensive purposes, they're basically candy bars. They're candy bars that are jam-packed with, like, in between 16 to 20 grams of protein in every single bar. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they are covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing for a keto diet. And you can check them out. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with the Athletic's Ali Khambijani. Now, Ali Khan, you know, we kind of dove into that rabbit hole about, you know, Mike D'Antoni and kind of, you know, getting some clarification on you know, the on, you know, goings on of what happened with the team last season, which brings me, you know, we're going to circle back to Steven Silas and this team this season. And one word that Silas has used repeatedly is optionality, which first off is sounds like a breath of fresh air. and so far, I think one thing that we need to address is that, you know, you mentioned having Russ out there as, you know, as a non-shooter. And I think one of the issues with that, with last year's version of the team, is even though they were, you know, during small ball, they were five out hypothetically, you really weren't, because you had Russ, who was treated as a non-shooter in that lineup whenever he was on the floor, which is why we saw stretches the first four games against the Thunder where Russ didn't play, and then stretches where Russ was sitting, where the team arguably looked better and more cohesive when they had optionality, when they had Jeff Green at the five spot who could space the floor and act as, you know, a secondary or tertiary ball handler who could run some of those 1-5 pick and rolls or those inverted pick and rolls with James Harden to really generate some unique looks offensively. And I think that's where we're going to see a world of difference with this team, with Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins, because they provide so much more versatility on that end of the court.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing the Rockets look for in the offseason is making sure that they were able to actually play five out. And not only play five out, but not have to sacrifice size with DeMarcus Cousins and Christian Wood. I think something in particular about both of them that really stands out to me is that not only are they centers, but they're centers who can play well to their strengths and they complement each other really well. So offensively, they play very similarly, other than Boogie's a lot bigger, so he can kind of hold his own in the post and be able to post up. But both are, I would say Boogie right now is a better passer, but Christian Wood is kind of developing into that passer as well. Both can shoot the ball extremely well from the perimeter. Both can kind of play at any part of the floor that they need to. And Coach Silas is going to be kind of placing them in the corners and top of the key. That's primarily where you're going to see the centers of the offense kind of operate from. Defensive, I think this is where it's even better, where to start the game, you have Christian Wood in there who can not only play drop coverage, which we saw in his one game against the Spurs, but he can also switch. I think that's one thing that the coaching staff is really excited about. They can throw out different defenses just because of Wood's ability to adapt, be flexible, and have the athleticism and the skills to switch on opposite players and also be able to kind of execute drop coverage and be a rim protector. That's where DeMarcus Cousins is working with him the most. You'll often see at games, well, during timeouts, DeMarcus will go talk to Christian Wood, like, hey, I saw you doing this, or are you doing this? You need to make sure you do this. And so we're seeing that growth, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing for me this season, is seeing the strides that Christian Wood takes as a defensive player. Because he has the tools, he has the skill sets. I ask DeMarcus Cousins, I ask Eric Gordon, I ask Coach Silas, and others, Christian Wood reminds them of, and we've heard a lot of Anthony Davis comparisons, and it's not only because, I mean, that's a big deal if you hear Anthony Davis comparisons. So I think defensively, that's going to be the biggest thing for me, is making sure that Christian Wood can actually play to his strengths, which I believe will be as a rim protector and also somebody who can handle his own off switches.
You know, and I think when you're looking at Christian Wood too, you know, obviously, you know, he had a pretty stellar debut, you know, about as good as you could have hoped for in a Rockets jersey. Really went out there and impressed with that 27-10 outing. You know, it saw a little bit of maybe some chemistry issues, you know, early on in that game, you know, running some of the offensive plays, you know, just things didn't look as crisp, but that's, you know, what preseason is for. And so you kind of iron out those kinks as things move along, and he'll work on that chemistry with his teammates. But defensively, I remember you mentioning, and I remember seeing this on Twitter, that not only are they kind of mixing up some of their coverages defensively, they're doing, you know, they're utilizing some drop coverage. They are still switching a little bit. So I've got two questions for you. First of which is, you know, as how difficult is that, though? Because I know that when we saw this Rockets team practicing their switch everything defense, you know, initially that was kind of put in place by Jeff Bezelik a few years back, you know, that was the way that they guarded everything, which allowed, I guess, a level of continuity defensively where you knew that every time a screen happened, every time you approached or, you know, moved to a different spot on the court, a switch was bound to happen. And specifically, and maybe you can clean this up for me, I know that Bezdelic had a mantra where you had to touch, feel, voice, something to that effect, right?
Yes.
So I'll let you.
So how that usually worked with Bezdelic's defense was that you need to be physical and grab the player you're going to switch and actually, like, guide them to the switch, right? So let's say you're switching a pick and roll between Curry and KD. Well, defenders need to get their hands on both of them and guide both of them towards the other defender. So that's how you kind of be physical with them and kind of lead them to kind of stay in front of you. The key to a switching defense, or any defense in particular, but primarily switching, is point of attack defense. And what I mean by that is whenever you're going one-on-one, you have to be able to stay in front of your man. That was the biggest problem for the Rockets last year. They didn't have enough of those point of attack defenders who can kind of just stay in front, stay in position, not have to cause unnecessary help rotations from the weak side. PJ Tucker has talked about this in practice, that they have multiple guys who can stay in front. Nwaba, Sterling Brown, they have himself. They have Christian Wood. They feel like they can do well. Eric Gordon's been great in that kind of level. So I think they actually have a great pool of those types of point of attack defenders who can stay in front and allow them to be able to switch effectively
and kind of stay in front and not have to draw in those unnecessary help rotations, which cause a lot of their problems, especially when you're a small team like that. Now, when it comes to the defensive end as well, I want to make this point about the drop coverage. Why is drop coverage so effective with this team? Well, because you have a lot of guys who actually play really well coming off of screens and fighting through screens. Eric Gordon, as much as he is good at the low post, he's still really effective at kind of fighting over screens and kind of getting to the offensive play. Boogie Cousins is much better when he's down low and able to kind of not have to move as quick laterally to contest at the rim. Christian Wood is very fast and able to recover and be able to do different things. And we actually saw some semblance of different types of defenses. For example, when Christian Wood was on the floor and the second unit was on the floor, they ran a few defensive possessions with press, high press. So we're seeing these very small, subtle things that I don't think the casual fan or the fans who are listening may not necessarily see in live action, but now that you're hearing it, pay attention. You're seeing these small different things that Silas is really experimenting with to see that, you know, as the season goes on, can they rely on these things? Can they work on these things? We heard from Silas, especially early in training camp, 80% of the practices are all about the defense and the defensive structure. That's because it's all about communication. It's making sure that, hey, you do have good point of attack defenders, but in case a breakdown occurs, who's going to come over from the weak side? Who's going to communicate what's going to happen? That's going to be the key in this sort of type of defense.
No argument here. Communication, you hear about it from players, from coaches. Communication is key, especially defensively. If you're not vocal, if you're not communicating with your teammates, things are going to fall apart. Would it be, Ali Khan, would it be a fair characterization of last year's team to say that one of the reasons that they had issues defensively was not only at the point of attack, but also just that James Harden, you know, at times, and Russell Westbrook are not necessarily the best when it comes to a team defense standpoint. They're not necessarily the best team defenders. On an individual basis, you know, they can kind of hold their own when they're locked in, specifically, especially on ball. But you know, from a team perspective, they both have moments where they check out. They have bad off ball awareness at times defensively, and I think that led to a lot of lapses in the Rockets' defense last season. Do you think that's a fair accusation?
Yes, but I don't want to just say it was them. I think it was everybody. I think you also agree with me on that. But I think more importantly, it kind of goes back to my point that players have strengths, right? You can play and do switch everything, but you have to understand there are players who are actually better at fighting over screens versus kind of just settling and kind of inviting switch to that. And I think the Rockets have, you know, created a roster for Silas where you have multiple players who can do different things. You have a guy like Sterling Brown, who I think is a great on-ball defender with his ball pressure. And that's something that the coaching staff is really excited about. They're working with him on to ensure he can be somebody they can rely on whenever they need the pressure and opposing ball handler. David Nwaba, somebody who can just be an irritant and kind of be able to fight over screens, do a great job of staying to the hip of the offensive player. These small strengths that these defenders have, this coaching staff is doing whatever they can to make sure that they're optimizing it and they can take advantage of it by instituting this multiple complex defensive scheme.
One more question before we get you out of here, Ali Khan. Give me some thoughts on John Wall and what he brings defensively as a former All-NBA defensive player.
He has great hands, and that's one thing when I talk to people around him in Washington, they talk about is his ability to diagnose, react, and draw turnovers. I'm sorry, create turnovers. And so I think that's something you can expect. You're going to have somebody. Yes, you lost Robert Covington, who is the steel father. But you have a guy like John Wall who can be able to use his hands effectively, use his mind to be able to get in passing lanes, you know, use his quick hands to be able to create turnovers with ball handlers and attack on the go. And he wanted to attack on the go. He's the fastest player on the team. So that's something to look forward to. One thing I'm going to be eager to see, and if this is going to continue, not just with John Wall, but with James Harden as well. The Rockets had this defensive coverage they ran in the last few seasons where it was called 54 and 55. Now, what the 55 is switch everything, and that's kind of what we saw, especially at Western Conference Finals here. But 54 is you pretty much switch only the Clint Capella and that James Harden ball screen. I'm curious to see, now with Christian Wood here, are they going to run that similar type of defense when they switch everything, when they kind of not switch, but if James Harden, because of how good he is in the post, or if John Wall, because of how he can maybe hold his own and create turnovers in the post, if they switch that Wood and Wall or Wood and Harden pick and roll and be able to just allow those guys to fight for themselves in the paint. I think that's going to be interesting. because one thing that James Harden and John Wall both have are those quick hands, which is why James Harden is one of the best post defenders in the league. It's not just because the team's players don't shoot well against him or over him. Well, it's because he's really good at drawing turnovers. I think he's always had around, maybe not above all the time, but he's at around a 20% forced turnover rate. So I think that's going to be something I'm eager to see into the season, is that a defensive trend that continues from previous seasons.
Ali Khan, as always, I feel like I learned so much about the game of basketball when I'm able to sit down and talk with you, and hopefully our listeners feel the same. Now, before we get you out of here, let me give you a chance to plug where people can find your content at.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Rockets_insider. Always having a conversation there, so feel free to tune in and join along. You can also follow me on YouTube. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Rockets Film Room. Going to be posting a lot more as we head into the season. And lastly, you can follow my work at The Athletic. I'll have a breakdown coming for you guys very, very soon in the coming days.
Awesome. I look forward to it. As always, thank you so much for hanging out, spending time with us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. For today's episode with Ali Khanbijani of The Athletic, hope you enjoyed it. That's going to be where we cut things off. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.